Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing
cake. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Greetings.
Welcome. Greetings, greetings.
You caught me off guard, Dennis. How's everything over by you, okay?
Still learning. It's a very special night tonight. We have been given the opportunity to have a great discussion with the family, man, and that's always exciting. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm still learning too. Work from home today, so it was a little busy, but was quite excited to be able to be on this Friday with you and the family and everyone else. Our peace and love to Scotty as well, and Dave as well. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate you, brother. We had a great conversation today as well. Matter of fact, we're going to jump into the little brief disclaimer real quick. I just wanted to touch base on this particular thing. It's funny, Dave and I kind of talked about some of this earlier today, and he and I are on the same page as far as this particular subject is concerned. We're all here to learn and to share with each other. And this platform, and I think I could say I'm speaking for Scotty, though I may be incorrect, and he can correct me if I am, is not a platform that was designed for anti-blackness and disrespect of each other. Let's get together. We are people who come together for a purpose, which is to work towards ending modern-day slavery and human trafficking and to end the system of white supremacy. I think that should always be at the focal point of our focus in regards to the work that we do and the other subjects that we tackle. We should never allow a subject or one's position on the subject to create enmity. Enmity is what the enemy thrives on. And ultimately, when we fight with each other, we do the job for them. And that's not what any of these platforms, I think, are for. We're for, the progressive upliftment of our people globally and to provide information that they won't get anywhere else as far as looking at their television or listening to their local so-called radio, if that's what you want to call it. So let's just practice that black self-respect that we all talk about and we know about so intimately, and just bring what we have to the table. We learn tons and tons of information from each other. Everyone's perspective adds depth of perception to other people. You never know what your commentary can do to help another person in whatever they're dealing with in their life. So let's really focus on the uplifting and positive aspects and, focus on the problem and then the system of white supremacy and then human slavery and human trafficking. And let's make it happen as a group. You know, I love the family. Let's get it cracking.
Before we get started, I just like to add in to that anti-blackness statement, because today I've recounted many of times of where I have come face to face, just me living life. I've done quite a few things in my short 36 years, and I've come in contact with a lot of people, as well as Brother Scotty has, knowing that being in the service, although we were more confused then with our participation, but it does bring you, it brings you in front of so many different faces, all colors, creeds, religions, ideologies. Well, I've told here and on our show before that a few times, not every single time, but more times than not, I run into Africans, and they have an attitude, you know, whether it's a nose up for whatever reason. And sometimes it's just a perception that they was fed in that mind control room when they was being indoctrinated about who to deal with and who not to deal with when they come to the United States. Well, today, I've experienced the complete opposite. And it was interesting because me and Brother Roz was talking about how we was going to formulate the show. And this happened right in the middle of our conversation. Where I work at, we make records, heavy duty records. You know, they can pick up a myriad of different things, and I never see any melanated people in there unless they are working for somebody who's purchasing a record. So, three Nigerians walk in, and of course they're being led by one of the salesmen, which is a white man. He's leading them through, showing them everything. And when one of the Nigerians, as soon as they walked in, it's like I felt their presence and they felt mine. And one of them gave me a head nod upward. For those of you who don't know, I don't know if it's a Southern thing, but that's a what's up. So, you know, I nodded my head back and they came direct, they beeline directly to me. And the white man was talking, and I was like, yo, excuse me, where are y'all from? And all of them just started giggling, you know, teeth showing and what have you. And one of them told me, we from the motherland. The other one kept on giggling, and then the third one told me that they was from Nigeria. And then he came and he shook my hand and told me that it was nice to meet me. Now that right there changed because I'm actually injured right now, but that changed the whole course of how I was feeling about that day, because I smiled at them, they smiled at me, and they was just glad to see somebody approach them in that type of manner. So it's true, you know, that anti-blackness is contagious. It's very contagious. How, whatever type of energy that you're putting out is normally what you'll receive in. So with that being said, Brother Rob, I just wanted to share that real quick. So, like I said, with that being said, you go ahead on and continue with the beginning of the show, brother.
No problem. That was a great one, because that was, it, like you said, it happened while we were talking, so it was quite interesting. I think it was Brother Thomas in New York that always says America's number one export is anti-blackness. And I think that's one of the most accurate statements that I've heard in a very long time. Brilliant assessment. First, please continue to support our Black Talk Radio Network. Please do. We're trying to keep this platform and expand it and allow the source ideas and opinions that we propagate, that we hope everyone is getting constructive information from, will be able to continue with your support. You can join BTR Community for $24 a year. With the BTR Community platform, you can get all of your social media, basically all of your social media activity. You can, you know, practice that through the BTR Community platform and know that your information is not being collected, you're not being data collected, data mined. Your information is not being sold to anyone. We don't get any advertising dollars from any corporations whatsoever. Its full support comes from the people, and we would like that to be the people that listen and get positive and constructive information from the platform. Also, you can make donations as well at the Black Talk Radio website. There should be a link there. I can't remember exactly where it is. I think it's on the top side of the website, if I remember correctly. You can also make donations there. If everybody who listened to the platform donated at least $1, we'd be able to expand our reach as far as the adding more things you can do both on the BTR Community platform as well as expanding our platform as far as us wanting to eventually open up brick and mortar radio stations in cities across the country, so we can have these things more localized as well as far as the access to information for our people. So please do support, please join BTR Community. There's a lot of incredible information being shared by some of the people that both call in and host the program, and we learn from each other all the time. So if you really want to just get constructive information and share with like-minded Black people, please join BTR Community and let's help this grow and make it a success so that we can continue to let this platform survive and do what it needs to do. Like Dave says, give some of your financial energy. And that is correct, because every dollar you get is a unit of energy for what you expend while working on the plantation, wherever that may be. So please continue to support the platform and the network. I thank you all for that. And did you have something you wanted to get into, Jenna, before we go through today's articles, or no?
Yes.
Okay.
And I guess I'll start with one of my latest posts on there.
Okay.
I'm away from my computer, so if you will, do you have everything pulled up?
Yes, I have the thread pulled up. I thought I was missing
okay.
it for a minute, but I'm here. Go ahead.
What I want to get into is this this plea to President Trump from the white South Africans.
Oh yes, let me find that.
To become to allow them to immigrate to the Americas because they are no longer welcome in South Africa. Excuse me, not that they're no longer welcome, but that they are their land is being taken from them. I would like to go into that one first.
Okay. That's not it. You posted it earlier in the thread, right?
Yeah,
I got it. Yeah, I got it. So you want me to read the blurb, or you want me to open up the article and get into that?
We got to open up the article before we can discuss it.
Okay, no problem. I'm opening it up now. Give me 1 second.
And you can find these up on the Tando Radio Show for today. You can find all the articles that we're going to, most of the articles that we're going to go through
that
have been posted.
And this particular one is at Newsweek.com. The title of it is Thousands Sign Petition Asking Trump to Let White Farmers in South Africa Migrate to U.S. After Country Votes to Force Them Off of Land. And it says, in October last year, thousands of predominantly white protesters took to the streets throughout South Africa to protest a string of deadly attacks in rural areas of the country. More than 12,000 people have signed a petition asking President Donald Trump to let white people in South Africa emigrate to the U.S. amid a vote by the country's parliament favoring a motion that would see South Africa's constitution amended to allow for land to be stripped from owners without any compensation. Well, they took it without compensation. The motion, which will still need the approval of the South African Parliament's Constitutional Review Committee before an amendment can even be drafted, has once again stoked fears among the country's white farmers of a violent and disastrous land redistribution akin to that which crippled Zimbabwe in the 2000s. The online petition calls for Trump to, quote, take the steps necessary to initiate an emergency immigration plan allowing white Boers to come to the United States, unquote. Boer is the term used to describe South Africans of Dutch, German, or Huguenot descent, who are also commonly referred to as Afrikaners. there's more down here. Oh, you see? Wow, it says the petition suggests that Trump should stop admitting refugees from Somalia and the Middle East, claiming they, quote, cannot be properly vetted, unquote, and allow white South Africans into the country instead. A similar petition calling on European Union President Jean-Claude Juncker, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and British Prime Minister Theresa May to allow white South Africans into the EU countries has gained nearly 17,000 signatures. Wow, white people move fast. The motion was put forward by the economic freedom fighters and supported but amended by the ruling African National Congress, ANC, with the party promising reforms that will address racial disparities in land ownership. Lawmakers voted overwhelmingly in favor of the move, with the motion passing 241-83. It was a key part of the recently elected president, Cyril Ramaphosa's platform. Ramaphosa, who has long supported Nelson Mandela's vision for South Africa, took office last month, replacing former President Jacob Zuma. More than two decades after white minority rule came to an end in South Africa, most of the country's profitable farming land is owned by white residents. A recent land audit conducted by AgriSA, a South African agricultural industry association, found that white farmers still control 70% of the country's profitable farming land. AgriSA expressed concerns over the parliament vote, saying that while it, quote, fully understands the need for land reform and the frustration with the apparent slow process and is committed to orderly and sustainable land reform, politics and emotion dominated the debate, excuse me, unquote. Dan Kryak, AgriSA's president, warned that the rights of all property owners in South Africa were at stake. He said that amending the country's constitution property clause would be a slap backward into a past where the protection of property rights was not applied across the board. Julius Malema, the leader of the EFF opposition party, which introduced the motion, told parliament lawmakers, quote, we must stop being cowards. We must stop working around the white minorities who are governed by the fear of the unknown when it comes to the question of land expropriation without compensation, unquote. He said land expropriation would end disparity caused by, quote, criminals who stole our land, unquote. Malema also said, quote, the time for reconciliation in South Africa is, quote, unquote, over. News Com AU reported, quote, now is the time for justice, he said, unquote. He said, adding, quote, we must ensure that we restore the dignity of our people without compensating the criminals who stole our land, unquote. Malema has been a strong supporter of confiscating land from white farmers, saying in 2016 he was, quote, not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now, unquote. South African parliament members support for land expropriation comes at a time when the Zimbabwean government has established a compensation committee under its Land Acquisition Act to allow former commercial farmers whose land was seized 18 years ago under Robert Mugabe to be compensated. The move to compensate displaced farmers led by Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who was recently elected to replace Mugabe after he stepped down in November under military pressure, represents a significant departure from the approach of his predecessor. According to the Commercial Farmers Union of Zimbabwe, CFU, more than 4,000 white farmers were affected by the often violent land reform program. It also had disastrous consequences to the country's economy, with land reform accelerating Zimbabwe's economic decline with a collapse in farm production. Ramaphosa has urged people in South Africa not to panic over the results of the vote. South Africa's Cooperation Governance and Traditional Affairs Department echoed that sentiment in a series of tweets. Quote, this is a serious matter. It'll be handled through dialogue and in a stable manner. No need for beating war drums and creating unnecessary panic. South Africa belongs to all who live in it, unquote, the CTGA wrote. As we address the land issue, we'll ensure that equitable land is distributed to our poor people in a way that will ensure continued stability, unquote, the CTGA added. We can stop there for now. I think that's enough. You can get the gist of it, but the article is in the thread. What do you think?
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Hold on. I want to read this quote. NHTL debate at Sir Ramaphosa. Land is our heritage, our identity, and essentially our dignity. We owe it to our children to dispel the myth that Africans are not interested in commercial farming.
Yeah, I'll just keep that. That was right after I stopped, so you caught a good one.
Right, it was, and I wanted to read that. Now, this article is very much a must read.
Absolutely.
More importantly, see, because this article tugs at the heartstrings, especially over here in America, because mm-hmm. Everybody Absolutely. Watches what we do. And this article tugs at our heartstrings. But what we first must remember is that this same president, when he got in, he said that, no, that's false. We are not going to take the land back from the white farmers.
Mm-hmm.
That was not too long ago when he made that statement. And he made it publicly the same way that they're making this public. So I smell something there. But all at the same time, we have, and throughout this article, once you read this whole article, it does not, I repeat, it does not designate where that land is going to go now. So before we start jumping up and down, yeah, we got to take the land back from these white folks, we don't know what's being done with the land. We don't know what's being done with the land whatsoever. And a lot of times we allow our emotions. And the reason I can say this is because I have done this several times. I get emotional about something or another, and I allow my emotions to navigate my actions instead of my logic. Now, we have a history since this president has came in, and he's flip-flopped on everything that he stated multiple times. So it sounds great. The reason it sounds great is because we want to repatriate our land here. That's why it sounds so good. It sounds so marvelous. And it's so very interesting that this article comes out right after the Black Panther movie.
You know what else
because
I thought about?
Everybody.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, because everybody's hysterical about that vision and how to make it happen. And then you get an article like this that feeds into that vision and that hunger for justice when we don't know if justice is being served or not.
Fellas, I have a question.
Because taking the land from these white people does not mean that they are spreading that land back to the people. I think that was that you, Brother Scotty. You wanted to add in something?
Yes. Greetings to both Ross and Jenna. Thank you for hosting Tando Radio Show today. I noticed that too, Jerry, that this article came out following, you know, all the hype and coverage of the Black Panther movie. And I'm wondering, because you noticed in that movie they was calling the white people the colonizer. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
calling
sir.
Them the colonizer. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if that's gaining steam in Africa, the continent itself, if they are reexamining their relationship with these settlers and you know, referring to them as colonizers. But before I ask you both my question, just to give you a little bit more information, the new president of South Africa, when he was inaugurated, because you know they got rid of Jacob Zuma due
right.
to corruption, his relationship with those Indian mm-hmm. I don't know if they were Indian nationals or had attained South African citizenship, but you know, billionaire Indian family, you know, caught up in corruption, Jacob Zuma, that's why the ANC forced him to resign, and now they have a new president. Well, when he was inaugurated, he mentioned this. He mentioned that they were going to take, you know, the land back from those colonizers, but he issued the caveat where he said, as long as it does not jeopardize our food production. So I take that as meaning that if we don't have enough native folks, black folks, South Africans that can take over these food operations, then, you know, we will allow, you know, those white people to maintain the land. I don't know if they're going to call them owners or what have you. All right. But now to my question, why are these white South Africans wanting to immigrate to the United States instead of immigrating back to their ancestral lands of either the Dutch or the British? Because the Dutch colonized it first and then the British colonized it. So why they want to come to America, to the United States of America Incorporated, instead of going back to Britain where their ancestors are originally from, or to what is the country? Is the country called Dutch? I'm sorry. What's the name of that country?
Holland.
Thank you, Ross. Why do you think they want to come here?
I have a great answer for that, Scotty. And you brought up some salient points just now, but I'm going to touch on the answer first. The main thing is, number one, if they relocate here, they'll be considered African Americans and they can get the benefits that come with being African American. That's why they made the announcement in the article a few weeks back that Elon Musk was an African American. Also, black farmers are having their land stripped from them at record numbers. And that land, since they're farmers, they can then take over that land and do the work that the black farmers used to do. So I think that it's a twofold plan, and they'll, of course, get the benefits that come with being a white immigrant, and that will be attached to the benefits that come with being African-American, because the only people that get so-called African-American benefits are non-indigenous citizens of the country or even, you know, fresh imports. So that's what I think is going on with that. The other thing that you touched on...
Hold on before you go with that, because I want to... And I just want to make a real simple point. We also have to remember the birth to death ratio here.
Yes.
Their numbers are dwindling so fast.
That's this actually priority way, one. Yeah.
This is the way for them to bolster their numbers with nobody blinking an eye. And I just wanted to add that. That's my answer, Scotty. I know it's very simple.
No, but I agree.
If you look at it from a logical standpoint, along with what Brother Rye says, just the sheer number of white people that's going to come from there, because it, in the article it mentioned 12,000, but we know it's well over that. So
hey, can I tell you something else? Okay, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that's the way to bolster their numbers to because. Once again, when you listen to these races, the neo-Nazis, Aryan Nations, what have you, because I be spying on their groups too, that's their biggest concern, is that they're being wiped out. And this is a fresh batch of brand new white people to come in, and so that they could fester up together, especially with the anger that they feel from being kicked off of the land that they feel like they rightfully deserve. And they bring that terror here with a lot more numbers. Sorry about that, Brother Ross.
No problem. Think about this too. They get over here because they know that America is a country that accepts white criminals. Operation Paperclip sets that all out on the table, that we'll accept people who commit war crimes here, we'll give them new identities, and they'll do scientific work to work on the genetic annihilation of black people. That's what they came here to do. Then, you know, they come here, and imagine those who don't decide to be farmers, they decide to be officers of the law. So you got South African nationals coming here, like you said, they're enraged, they hate black people, and they're wearing a police uniform patrolling the community nearest you. Think about that. So it'll also be a campaign of redomination as far as taking hardline control over areas that they might feel they're losing a grip on because of what you said, Jenna, about the numbers starting to seriously drop. And also, I was thinking in reference to what Brother Scotty was saying about Jacob Zuma saying that they would only take away the land to the point at which it does not affect their farming capabilities. Think about this. When the Boas and them came, you had you know, the Zulu people were people who did have their own organized structure of agriculture. It was always the women who did the agriculture in the society. And ultimately, when the white people came in, they started the system of education, the school system, and that took them away from their traditional education where they would learn the different plants and how to properly till the soil and follow the schedule of the stars to know what dates to do certain things and when to harvest and when to reap and sow your plant. So a lot of that knowledge is lost. So if they're taking the land, which is exactly what happened in Zimbabwe and why their economy collapsed, they took all the land away, gave it to black people, and the black people didn't know what to do with the land because their traditional culture was destroyed by so-called modernization and the so-called educational system. So it's the same thing that's going to happen in South Africa. How many people in South Africa know how to farm? You have people that are dirt poor doing anything to survive. You have people who are educated, but they're educated in the ways of the Boers and basically the British. So these people don't have that connection to the earth that they should have, not due to their own fault, but due to the all-encompassing domination of the system of apartheid, which was just a system of white supremacy in the South African Dutch Boer fashion. So ultimately, I think it would be a bad idea for that reason alone, because I could see the same thing that happened in Zimbabwe happening there. That's pretty much what it is. What I would say is it would be good for the South Africans on the coast, because I remember I saw a documentary on Viceland called Black Market, where they went to South Africa and they were dealing with the fishermen who actually catch conch, and they would sell it around the world, and the price would go up on the black market, and it was the only way that they could make a living was to actually illegally fish, because the white people got a lockdown on the entire industry, and they have the capacity to create these vast farms, whereas the indigenous South Africans, he stayed up there, Michael Williams stayed with them a couple of weeks and learned how they went through this process. He went with them on the run. They had a couple of situations that got hairy, and they learned about the process of how this stuff traveled around the world. And for them to get control of the land on the coast would be good for those people there, because they're really being terrorized by the white folks. But as far as the farmland, I think that you got to make sure those people are able to use it properly, or it's just going to be self-destruction 101, and they're going to be begging the white farmers to come back if no one else comes to the rescue as far as any other groups.
Well, I was just about to ask you that, Ross. I want to do a follow-up. Y'all mentioned...
Go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
Yeah, y'all mentioned that a lot of the African farmers were pushed out of farming and they lost that knowledge and that ability. Right. So what do you think about us here, us African descending people here in the United States? Because you know that's mainly like my grandfather and you know...
I remember you talking about
that. Yeah, they were farmers. And I don't see with each generation that has been born, less and less of us are farming. I got a couple of cousins that might plant a little garden or something like that, but there's no major farming like we had during my grandfather's generation, where we were able to feed ourselves to a certain extent. So I was thinking, you know, this would be an opportunity for Africans in America to go to Africa, you know, that have that knowledge. But then the question popped up in my mind is, well, how many of us have retained that knowledge?
Yeah, and
well, let me add to that.
Sure,
Charles, you are exactly right, Scotty. And I was thinking about that too. I was going to bring that point up. And this is, and I say this all the time, it probably sounds redundant, but this is a simple case of the practice of the art of war.
Absolutely.
And in this particular case, they want to take back the land. What's going to happen is, like you said, they don't, like Brother Rod said, as well as you, they take the land and the people who they give it to, if they give it to anybody. Like I said, it never stated that in the article, first mm-hmm. and foremost. But let's just be positive and think that they gonna give it to the actual Africans in South Africa. Well, they don't know how to handle it. What happens then? You have a food shortage, and then you start asking for the people who was instructing the people who work the forms to come back, because we need y'all to be able to produce. It's a simple script out of the Art of War. You know, you disappear, you make people miss you, and then you beg for them to come back. And when you come back, you set all of the rules to whatever is going on. And that's what I see. That's exactly what I see. Now, if anybody out there that's listening, if you see something different, by all means, you know, y'all give us a call. And that phone number is 704, area code 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Now, is it time for a break, Brother Scott?
Yeah, we just passed the break, so we can probably take a brief
break and come back. Oh, no. Breaks are at the top of the hour and the last half hour.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So with that being said, you know, it's a perfect setup. And like I said, you have to pay attention to the mannerisms and the statements that's been made by this current president of how he's manipulating certain aspects of this dynamic. Because although we see these white people crying and sobbing, you know, Gus off of the cows, you know, he say that's one of the most deadliest weapons, to have white women crying. You know, everybody want to conjure up towards them. You know, so you have this going on throughout these interviews, with this going on, and a lot of us are like, yeah, we need to take that. But like I said, we gotta watch our emotional responses, and we have to pay attention to logic.
Can I jump in there too? Because I just thought of something quite profound. When you talked about then, let's say America accepts the farmers here and they come here, and the black farmers or the black people who get the land to farm it can't farm it, and they're starving and they beg for the white people to come back, it's going to be tyranny all over again, without even needing an army, because they're going to be considered the most precious resource since they're the ones who can actually grow the food. Now, when you think about it today, you know, most South Africans live around the white people and they think of them as, you know, they're there. So they're very much psychologically and socially conditioned to be assimilated to having the white presence there and trying to act normal around that, because that's every day. Just like us here, we go, you know, they're driving our buses, they're our dentists, our doctors. So we don't think of them as the enemy. We think of them as our doctor or our dentist or whatever the case may be. We personalize it. But the reality is that they are the enemy. So when you study their history, whenever they've pulled up and left the place, they don't leave the quote-unquote innovations that they created or they bought or they, you know, set up there. They take everything. They take the train tracks up. They take the desks. They take the tables. Like, they take everything. So they leave the people completely impoverished. No toilet paper, like, all of that stuff. So the country goes back to, like, basically Stone Age living overnight when the white people pull up and leave. And this is the whole concept of, like, the integration process is literally just sleeping with the enemy. You think if white people picked up and left America that they're going to leave all the technology here for the indigenous people to exploit? They're going to leave all of their train tracks nice and cool for everybody, black people just jump in and start driving the trains themselves? They're going to destroy all that infrastructure, and it's going to be thrown back into the stone. They'll probably destroy the grid, everything, just to make sure that they don't leave anything that they would say is theirs. We brought this to this country is what they would say when they do it. And they've done it in other parts of the world. So the idea is to try and set up your own infrastructure, your own educational system, where your children go and learn and they get this information and bring it back into the community. And we start being creative and creating our own things. I remember Dr. Clark used to say, just black people, just start making your own underwear. Just start making your own socks. Just start with that and then expand
it. Brother Rob. You're getting into another subject, and we're gonna get into the
let's do this.
The newly reformed I'm finna say customs, But the newly reformed, I'm having a brain pause.
What's the matter? Take your time.
Culture. Newly reformed cultures. We're going to get into that, and that's all a part of it. So before we spend too much more time on this, if there's nobody on the board, Brother Scotty, we can go ahead on. First of all, before we even do that, did that answer your question, either one of us, Brother Scotty? Okay, I think Brother Scotty has muted himself.
So
hopefully that that answered your question, at least from our perspective.
I'm sorry. I got distracted with something going on right here. Was a question put to me?
Yes, sir. It was just did either one of those answers answer your question?
Yes. I mean, there are a myriad of things to consider, so there's no wrong answer. So, yes, you did.
All right. Thank you, sir. We're going to continue on down this timeline of articles before we get into the show, because I think that's, like I said, all of that's going to come about with the reintroduction of culture, and not what we think of as culture, but what culture actually does for us and why it's needed. So with that being said, if you would like to go on to the next article, Brother Ross.
All right. I think we're just going to jump on the ones that are most important, so we don't, really squander too much time, because I know we've gotten into the time a little bit deep. So the next one I wanted to get into is one from the Mobile New York Times. It's China presses its internet censorship efforts across the globe. So the little blurb says, within its digital borders, China has long censored what its people read and say online. Now it is increasingly going beyond its own online realms to police what people and companies are saying about it all over the world. So this, again, just ties into China's global domination. It ties into their militaristic game of Go that they play, in which they deal with the taking over and domination of time and space, not necessarily a chessboard sort of theory where you're going through militaristic combat, or even whether it's political, which is nonviolent combat, or economic, which is financial combat. Basically, it's just a means of outmanning each other in some form militaristically, or with a militaristic edge to it, even if there's no physical bloodshed. With China,
Brother
they
Rob,
deal with... Yes?
Now, do you think with this net neutrality thing, and me and you discussed this earlier, as far as I haven't seen any or heard anything about this lawsuit that these other companies and the people of the United States have brought forth to counsel that, do you think this is an act as far as the United States trying to not necessarily be like, but integrating these ideas from other countries that are kind of tyrants,
more oppressive,
yes, and they're just implementing this same type of thing by way of company lobbying, and you can answer that question as well, Brother Scotty, because I know you are well versed in this net neutrality, because you are the first person that I've heard talk about it. And you was discussing this long before it even hit the airwaves as far as mainstream media.
I would say this first, I think there's a reason we're not hearing about it. It's because possibly they're not doing anything. They've kind of been stymied, so they're trying to think of what's the next point of attack. It could be to let time run out and keep it out of the public's eye, so that as time gets more critical, they'll bring it back out with a vengeance to get the people more stoked about facilitating political change by dissension. So I think there's a myriad of reasons that it could be, but I would say those are a couple that I would throw out there right now. And then I don't think the U.S. learns anything from any other country. They are the greatest at censorship and domination, but they do it under the mask of freedom. They do it under the mask of patriotism. They do it under the mask of there's terrorists that are coming to get you in the night. You need to be fearful, and you need to allow us to take these rights away from you in order for you to be protected. And then they make something happen, and they do the Hegelian dialectic where they come with the solution. The solution is more loss of your rights, and the people are so psychologically terrorized, and they're suffering from CTSD and PTSD. So they just say yes to whatever they say, no matter how oppressive, no matter how gulag, no matter how Third Reich that it seems. And that has been the play from day one. And I think America has outclassed every other country on the planet at censorship and domination via the premise of giving people that the thought and idea that they are free and they are in the freest country on the planet. They might learn different techniques from other places, because some of these places come up with innovative techniques using different sorts of electronic technology and computer technology to censor. But as far as actually like being able to lay that out, there's nobody better than the United States at that. Nobody's better than that than them, I would say, in my opinion. So that's my take on it. Go ahead.
So the illusion, the illusion of freedom is
absolutely
what you're basing that off of. I don't mean to sound sarcastic, but that's what that is. That's the illusion of freedom.
Look at we're under the illusion we're free. We're under the illusion that slavery was abolished. We're under the illusion there's some of us that'll say, I don't know nothing about no white supremacy. Ain't no white person supreme to me. Ain't no white person dominating me. And then you ask them, do you stop at a red light? Yes. Okay. Do you stop when you see the red, white, and blue flashing lights behind you? Yes. Do you pay your taxes? Yes. Do you go and see a white person when you get sick? For the most part, probably. Yes. Like okay, who takes you to and from your job? Who drives the bus? A white person. Okay, but you're not under a system of white supremacy. Okay, a lot of us don't even. That's how successful they have been. That's how successful they have been at fooling us. And I remember I had a conversation with Umalima Baruti one day, and he had broken down the idea of white supremacy like this. He said first it was segregation, and they didn't want any contact with us. We had our own areas, as degenerated as they were, as toxic as they were still ours. Then they saw that in some areas we were able to be extremely successful with the black dollar recycling hundreds, if not thousands of times before leaving the black community. We started to build these black wall streets across the country. So they were like, wait a minute, they're doing too well. We have to destroy that. So they violently destroyed others. They gentrified the rest. And that's how we lost basically most of them. Then they realized, well, wait a minute, let's integrate. And he described integration like an abusive relationship. If a man lives in the same house with a woman, he can dominate her at will because he can beat her up, he can lock her in a room, he can handcuff her to the bed, he can smack her around. No one can do or say anything. But if that woman picks up and moves back home with her mom, the abuse is done because she's not within arm's length to get her behind kicked. And that's what white people did. They moved amongst us. We start thinking, oh, yeah, they're cool. They're white people. We have our white neighbors. Some of us even would seek white validation just by, like, we'd be so enamored with the fact that we have white neighbors and Billy and Biff and Jessica's next door. That's how we get indoctrinated and not realizing that it's all a psychological setup and that the money goes where the white people go. So as soon as white flight happens, all the money goes with the white people to where they go. And then everything in your area becomes depleted, destroyed, gnarled, and completely collapses. And you're sitting there dumbfounded, wondering what the heck happened. That's because you've been sleeping with the enemy all along, not understanding that all it takes is for basically the white genetic annihilation to kick in. I'm around too many non-white people. I'm starting to have a mental breakdown with this. I need to be amongst my own people. I'm getting up and I'm leaving. And once that happens, everything follows them. All the money, all of the positive politics, all the creative stuff, the museums, everything leaves, and you just left with liquor stores, churches, burnt out buildings, and crime and drugs. And
with
mentally
that being
ill people,
said,
you know.
With that being said, you can't leave out the mentally ill people, because we're gonna talk about that here in a few. But
okay.
With that being said, Brother Scotty had some input that he wanted to get in. Brother
Absolutely.
Scotty, go ahead.
Gentlemen.
Yeah, so I'm reading this article from the New York Times about the Chinese. So-called censoring, what people can access online. It also reminds me of Cuba. Cuba does the same thing. But see, they're painting that as a bad thing. I don't think that we, okay, for example, let me put it this way. Number one, we have to consider the New York Times has long been a part of the U.S. propaganda machine. Okay, so this is the source of this particular article, and that we should be skeptical of anything these liars say, because they have a long history of lying. But is censorship such a bad thing? I advocate for censorship. I don't think that any of these terrestrial radio stations, especially targeting black communities, should be playing that type of rap that pushes misogyny, self-destruction, selling drugs, using drugs, killing each other, killing people, shooting people in the face, and all that kind of stuff. Like Malcolm said, media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet. It controls the minds of the masses. Now, if you don't believe it can control your mind, it definitely can plant some seeds that can germinate and then grow in your mind. And next thing you know, I mean, just think about how many trends are set, or how people start doing something, or something becomes popular because it was popularized in media. So I'm not against censorship. And if I was the Chinese and I was the Cubans, I definitely would be putting something in place to keep this American propaganda from you know, being pushed in my own country. Is there right to? I feel, you know, they're looking out what's best for the interest. In a related story, they're also tamping down on that gangster rap which is trying to grow in their country. Okay,
and we speak to this after you're done, because you're saying some things that resonate with me personally. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we see what this gangster rap has done to the mindset of our young people going back to the 90s and what have you. So I don't blame the Chinese from wanting to protect its people, okay? Protect its people from American propaganda. Jenna mentioned net neutrality. That's a form of censorship. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm also speaking of going back to the gangster rap and these terrestrial radio stations. You know, my brother Kwabena Rasuli with Clear the Airways Project says, hey, they censor all the uplifting rap. That's censorship. You don't get to hear the positive rap and the revolutionary rap and the rap where they talking about racism, white supremacy, and slave. That's being censored off of these stations. So you know, the United States is the last one, or any American media company is the last one to be pointing fingers at another government talking about some censorship. And on the net neutrality, you know, stuff, that's a form of censorship. If Black Talk Radio or Black Talk Media Project in the net neutrality rules were repealed this week, or it was last week, it actually officially was repealed. Now, there's a whole lot of litigation concerning that. But again, for those that don't understand what that is, what these companies want to do is create two lanes on the internet, a fast lane and a slow lane. You got to pay to be in the fast lane. If you're in the slow lane, it may take a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes for my website, Black Talk Radio Network, to upload, and people be like, man, it's taking too long, and I'm off to something else. But if I'm MSNBC, right, New York Times, or something, I'm a pay to be in the fast lane, or I got some deal already in place with these ISP, and my stuff gonna be loading up fast. So that's what I think about the issue. I know I was kind of all over the place there, but
hold on, Brother Ross, because we know how you do. Let me just get this short and sweet out real quick. Excuse me.
Go ahead, brother.
You was exactly right, and that's why I wanted to bring that up, because like I said, China, Russia, and several other countries been doing this. You know, while white supremacy was running rampant, which it still is, but you know, there's a trend going on right now to where it's unpopular to be a racist white supremacist. So it's several things to knock down all of our rights. Some may even call them privileges, that we have as sorry about that, as U.S. citizens, they're using this hatred towards this outright racist sect of people to dismantle all of our liberties. Now, we just got those liberties not too long ago, and they're getting ready to be dismantled. And once again, I have to reiterate, you have to take out the emotions that's going on. It's like this whole thing with Google and YouTube, where these white supremacists are being censored. Now, that sounds good to us on the surface, until the law is passed and none of our stuff is being put out there. Well, not being put out there, but we're not allowed because of such and such. You know, because I've mentioned this many times, and I'm going to keep on repeating it. I said here on Tando that while all of this stuff is going on, we need to get together and make some things happen, because we have always been the number one prospect for mistreatment. Now, they use other people to get us to vote and to agree to certain circumstances, but then they turn around and they mistreat us with those same circumstances more than anybody else. So when we agree to certain things, we always have to have in the back of our minds that what would this do to us? What would this do to me? And I don't think a lot of us pay attention to that. And that's just my little short and sweet. I'm gonna sit back and let you go ahead and handle this, Brother Ross.
Okay, it looks like we're coming up on the hour now, so let's take the break and then I'll go into it, because it was really interesting what Scotty just spoke. Personal, but people will relate to it based on what he was talking about. So, Scotty, you want to go to the break, and then I'll just pick up once we get back.
Well, we got a caller. Let's take this caller. I believe it's Thomas out of New York, and then after Thomas, we'll go to break.
Okay, and then I'll get it in. Okay, no problem. Let's bring up Thomas. Peace, Brother Thomas. What's going on? What do you have to contribute? Or like Dave would say, what say you? How you doing, brother?
You guys go ahead to brief, and I'll come back when you come back. So I'm kind of in a crowded place.
Oh, okay, okay. So you want to go to break now, Scotty, or did you want me to just... Because I think it's going to run past the break if I start. It's not going to be super
okay,
long,
we'll though. Just take a little short break. It's not too long.
Okay, no problem. Let's do that.
All right, you're tuned in to Tando Radio Show. Remember, if you have a question or comment, you can give us a call at 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. Hit the star key twice. Hit the star key twice to unmute yourself. We'll see you in queue and come to you as soon as possible. Stay tuned.
I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back to Tando Radio Show. Thanks again, Scotty. Brother Thomas, are you in a good spot now, or are you still in the noisy area?
I just wanted to say real quick what you guys were just talking about. Now, if you let the United States control your internet, you know, with Google and stuff, they could use it against you. That's how they started the Arab Spring. Mm-hmm. Russia used to let the U.S., Google and stuff in there. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Pussy Riot.
Yes, I am. Two of them are missing, yes. Oh, my goodness.
So they use Pussy Riot to try to overthrow the government there, the same way they did the Arab Spring. They also call it the Purple Revolution. They can send a mass text or a mass email or Facebook to everyone that, you know, we're going to protest today at the square, and then send a mass text or email to their opposition saying they're going to protest against the opposition, and you have both sides in the middle of the streets about to fight each other. And once that happened, a lot of countries just took Google and stuff out completely. You know, of course, China's censorship is to censor a lot of the stuff that they've done to their own people. They don't want their people to know. But for the most part, they use this in the Ukraine. They use this in Russia, Algeria, Egypt, Iran. They use this in several countries in 2012. And it was called the Arab Spring or the Purple Revolution. I'm with Malachi.
Yeah, because I remember that's what happened with
Tunisia. It was over Twitter, fellas. It was Twitter. They were using Twitter.
Right, yes, yes. Because that's I remember they had, not too long ago, had the anniversary for Tunisia, then also in Egypt, in Tahrir Square, where they had the protest there. It was facilitated via Twitter and Facebook. They were sending messages, and that makes total sense. And thanks for that contribution, too, because that is quite important. And what I was thinking is, when Brother Scotty, you were talking about censorship, really what you're talking about is a codified code of ethics. That's what a Maashan society is. You know, they were actually, before they settled in on the 42 negative confessions, they had hundreds of different codified rules and laws for things in order to keep the order within the society. Back in the Nile Valley, that was something that was really important. So really what censorship is having a code of ethics and saying there's certain things that we're not going to abide in our country, because it creates dissension that can no longer make the country cohesive and function in the most paramount way. Now, in America, we're taught that freedom is having access to any and everything, no matter how debased it is, no matter how atrocious it is, no matter how disrespectful to other people, other cultures, other ethnic groups it is, whatever it is, if you can't access it, you're not truly free. And that just really is a country that has that's infested with what they would call isfet, which is basically evil, negativity, chaos, and disorder. And that's what we see today in America. What they call civilization is nothing but the white people's codified version of organized chaos. There's not really anything civil about the way we live. So to me, when you speak like that, I don't think of it as censorship. I just think of it as actually creating a more just and balanced society. And you know, I don't know how others feel about it, but that's how it stands out to me. And when you talked about censorship of American culture, the destructive culture, it just takes me back. When I went to Trinidad in 2003, I went back home, and I'll never forget it. I was going home, and I'm sitting there thinking, I can't wait to hear some calypso and some soca and some, you know, just indigenous music. So I get there. I'm taking a cab to my grandmother's house, and they're playing 50 Cent. And, like, every car, this is when 50 Cent was at his height, and every car that's driving by is just banging 50 Cent, 50 Cent. I get to the house. They're playing BET. And one thing I noticed was that the crime in Trinidad started to mirror the stuff that the rappers will rap about. The sexual looseness, because we have our own culture, but it wasn't a sexually repressed culture in Trinidad. So you didn't really hear of, like, wild pedophilia and raping women crazy. Most times it might be domestic violence, things like that. The husband's drinking, stuff like that.
Yeah,
but
it's art. It's art imitating life.
Well, actually, it's life imitating the art.
I mean, that's what I meant. Life imitating art.
Yeah, because, like, when I went home, I was just like, wow. And I remember between that time, the early 2000s and now, there was a resurgence of indigenous culture, teaching people, young people, how to play the steel pan, how to make the steel pan, just bringing back all of those things that made Trinidad a wonderful place when I was a child to be. And now it's a balance, but they're still fighting that import of anti-blackness, as Thomas so eloquently labeled it, because that's all that it is. And ultimately, I think, like you said, that censorship is necessary. If you have a country in which, you know, like, they didn't allow the use of the N-word in Trinidad. Matter of fact, I think it was Jay-Z that got arrested for doing that. They told him, if you say it on stage, you're going to jail. and then he ended up having to pay a fine or whatever because they drug him right off the stage. You know, that even happened to Big when he performed in Jamaica. He went there and they told him about cursing and all of that stuff. He went up there and he tried to do his stuff uncensored. They carted him right off the freaking stage. Like, it wasn't a game. And then as we started to take in this culture and assimilate it, it became looser. So now you have, you know, some young folks using the N-word in their lyrics. Now you have, I even have relatives that celebrated Thanksgiving. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, that's not even an indigenous Trinidadian holiday, and you're celebrating the destruction of the life of indigenous people in the mainland, and that's just idiosyncratic. But they think because white Americans do it, it's the thing to do. You know, and this is the way cultures get completely destroyed, and now they have the means of doing it in the fastest ways possible using the internet and using media. So, yeah, what Scotty talked about resonated with me on a very, very personal level because I have relatives that have been killed and all kinds of stuff, and a lot of it was similar to the things that I grew up seeing in crack era 1980s and 90s New York City. So, yeah, it's really
once,
serious.
Once again, that. Once again, we have got to that point to where everybody is on the same page. And with that being said, we're going to mm-hmm. move on mm-hmm. to the next article because, like I said, in this last half hour, I want to get into this reintroduction into culture
yes,
and
sir.
What culture actually is and what it actually does. So with that being said, let's get to the next article, Brother Rise, if you will.
Okay. Now, there's one here that I think is quite telling, and it's not actually in BTR on the Tando, but it is in BTR community. This one is from DW.com. And it is rifle-toting worshippers renew wedding vows at Pennsylvania church. Hundreds of U.S. couples packing AR-15 rifles had their marriages and weapons blessed at an unusual church ceremony. Children from a nearby elementary school had to be relocated for their safety. Worshippers clutched rifles and donned crowns made of rounds of bullets as they exchanged or renewed wedding vows at a church in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania on Wednesday. Brides wearing white and grooms in dark suits brought dozens of unloaded AR-15s for the commitment ceremony at the World Peace and Unification Sanctuary building in the town of Newfoundland, about 190 kilometers or 120 miles north of Philadelphia. The church, which has a worldwide following, believes the AR-15 symbolizes the quote-unquote rod of iron in the Book of Revelation and encourages couples to bring the weapons. How many in the congregation, like many other Americans, believe U.S. school shootings do not justify stricter gun laws in a country where firearms are linked to more than 30,000 deaths annually? Weapons checked at the door. At the entrance to the church, an attendant checked each weapon at the door to make sure it was unloaded and secured with a zip tie. The elaborate commitment ceremony featuring about 250 couples went off without a hitch, but forced classes at a nearby elementary school to be moved down the street to other campuses. The AR-15, which featured so heavily in the ceremony, was used in the Florida High School Massacre on February 14th. The ceremony fell on the same day that the survivors returned to classes for the first time since the killing of 17 students and school staff by a 19-year-old gunman. The organizer, Young Jin Moon, the son of late church's founder and self-declared quote-unquote messiah, Sun Myung Moon, used the ceremony to back U.S. President Donald Trump's call for school staff to be armed. In a statement, he said teachers at the Florida school should have been trained to use weapons. Quote, each of us is called to use the power of the rod of iron, not to arm or oppress, as has been done in satanic kingdoms of this world, but to protect God's children, unquote. He said, citing the Book of Revelations in the Bible. And it says, worshippers reject gun control, and it continues. But I think that's more than enough for us to see, and they got pictures.
Yeah. Let me, because we got a few other things we want to get into. And I'm glad they brought that up within the article as far as the school shootings and the teachers being armed.
Mm-hmm.
But for this particular, because that's what I want to get into next. Can you go ahead okay. and find that article, or did I even put it up?
Oh, you mean in the thread? Let me see if I can find it. Hold on.
Yeah, but while you looking for that, I want to, to this is a... As much as I hate to say it, this is a Gus T. Renegade moment. This article is a Gus T. Renegade moment. This is a celebration of the anti-ISIS papers. And what I mean by the anti-ISIS papers is that for those of you who have been lucky enough to come across the ISIS papers, you will find that the biggest detriment to this quote-unquote white... can you not hear me?
No, I'm sorry. I was just saying you didn't put it in the thread. It's not in there.
Can you pull it up on your end? We don't even need a thread for that.
Did you put it up on your end? Can you pull it up on your end?
I thought I did, but right now, you know, I got so many things going on. It was unexpected. So
no problem. Let's freestyle it then. Go ahead.
We'll just get into that in a few. But the biggest detriment, the biggest threat, is the melanated phallus. And once you read through the ISIS papers, you find out that their great equalizer is a big gun. And this is what these people were worshiping. They was worshiping a gun. It don't matter which gun, because all guns take lives if you use them in a proper manner. And what we know about a lot of these white people, it may not be all, but the majority of them, they practice. They practice. They can hit their targets, whether we talking about a 65-year-old lady with a 22, or we talking about a 3-year-old boy with a 22 long rifle, and everything in between. They practice with their guns. And this is what they were showcasing. It had nothing to do with the marriage. It had nothing to do with the marriage whatsoever. They brought those guns so that the press would show up to see what they had. That's all this was a glorified publicity stunt. Because we don't practice in these type of ordeals. Well, I can't say we, because I know that four out of my five children know how to squeeze the trigger the correct way. Because we go to the shooting range. I mean, like right now, I mentioned at the start of the show, you know, I've been hurting, I'm injured. You know, I'm still try to protect them, but all at the same time, if I can't do what I need to do, we have things around the house that can equalize that because they know how to use them. And that's something, that's part of that culture dynamic that I was speaking about that we have to get back into. But with that being said, if don't nobody have no questions, you know, we can get on to the next story. But we almost at the bottom of the hour, and I want to the next story at the bottom of the hour, Brother Roz. I want to get into this whole teachers having guns things. Now we 15 minutes away, but I want to get into this teacher. Before we get into it, if there's if anybody has any questions, comments, you want to refute anything that any of us have said tonight, you want to add on to anything that anybody has said tonight, by all means, give us a call. What Brother Dave would say right about now, a dialogue is more important.
Yep, it's more important than a monologue. Yes,
right.
Sir.
So with that being said, the number to call to Tando Radio, it will be area code 704-802-5056. That number again is area code 704-802-5056. Press ** to put yourself to raise your hand, and we'll get to you as soon as possible. Go ahead, Brother Ross.
Okay, so
hey, can I say something?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was just going to say, man, that article y'all just read, I think on the thread I posted that was a Welsen moment, you know, the sort of white woman with the big black gun. And we know that according to Welsen, the gun is a phallic symbol. It represents the black man's penis. So I said, look at this white woman with a big black penis in her hand, you know. She's essentially marrying a black penis, even though she's marrying a white man. She's standing there with a big black gun. Yeah.
Brother Thomas, that's where you get the old saying, tall, dark, and handsome. But I just want to throw that in there. I'm gonna go ahead, brother. My apologies.
Nope. That was all I was going to say. And you're right. That's another Welsen saying, tall, dark, and handsome. Yep.
Wow. Very, very perfect. That's a perfect one. Oh, man. So the next one that I was going to pull up, that was a great one. I love that, Thomas. Where is it at? This is another Dr. Welsen moment here, too. This one is, let me see, it's from dailymail.co.uk. So it says, woman turns to panhandling to raise money for in vitro fertilization after 13 years. Struggling to have a child due to husband's rare genetic condition. And this is a white couple. I think they're from England. And it says, Jared suffers from a rare genetic condition called Kallmann syndrome, K-A-L-L-M-A-N-N syndrome, which makes it nearly impossible for him to have a child. KS delays or stops puberty, making it difficult for those born with it to produce either sperm or eggs, which makes conception nearly impossible. Jessica started panhandling to raise money for in vitro fertilization treatments and for medication to help Jared produce more sperm. These are the levels that white people are stooping to. It says the couple has also created a You Caring page to raise $19,000 for treatment. So this ties right into the genetic annihilation thing again. And just the fact that these are the things that you can do when you're white. You don't have to have a job. You can just, you know, panhandle for money, and people will pay you. They'll give you the money too. You know, when you're black, you can't ask for anything. You know, the only thing they'll give you, without asking a question, is jail time when you're black. You know, or a beat down or something like that. But these white people are actually panhandling and have basically a GoFundMe page dedicated to her husband producing more sperm. Just food for thought about the things that you can do when you're white that we can't do as non-white victims of white supremacy, in our own country for that matter. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is really interesting. But these are the types of things that happen besides making sperm out of skin cells and having children with 3 and 4 and 5 parents and all that kind of stuff. So just add that to the list of the things that these folks are doing to prevent being wiped out by Mother Nature. I just find that to be quite telling. And I thought it was interesting. What do you think of that, Dennis, or Scotty, or even Thomas, too?
I think that you are absolutely right. You know, it's so many privileges. And I say privileges is because if me or you was to get out there and panhandle, we will be jailed. Excuse me. My apologies. We will be put into slavery for at least 45 days. You know, they going whatever we made, they going to get that times 7. So,
yeah.
And they going to take that and treat themselves to lunch with the money that we made. So, you know, these things happen. You know, it's everybody on the call right now, everybody that's listening, everybody that's going to listen to the podcast, you have pulled up on the interstate getting ready to turn and seeing these white people on your left hand, and they might have a pit bull that look better than yours.
Pit bull super healthy.
And they haircut, they might have on some shaggy clothes, but how we know those ain't Kanye West clothes? I mean, his stuff is like a bum, you know, so he might be having designer stuff on while he asking you for money. And we have seen a number of white people, mostly white women, being followed by these little media companies such as not actually TMZ, but kind of the same type of deal to where they follow people and see what's going on for real. We've seen so many of these happen across the country where a lady was begging for money and she got $20 when they finally got on camera, not knowing what she done put in her purse. But she finally cripple walked all the way back to the bus station, get off the bus, and then get in the Beamer. You know, these things happen for real. They happen for real. And some of us that's listening have gave them money.
My mother had a story that was profound about something like that.
yo, but you know what, though? On the other end, most of the brothers and sisters that be out there, in my particular town, I've never seen a sister out asking for money. I've seen a lot of brothers. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I look at is their beard, because they all normally have beards. And I ain't even talking about the white people. I told you what I seen from them, because I'm basing all of this off of what I see. But when I see the brothers, I always see they have a... Because I don't shave. I don't grow a whole beard or what have you. And from time to time, I might take 6 or 7 months and don't cut nothing. I just be super bushy, right? I don't have to get, you know what I'm saying, handsome or cleaned up or none of that. I have 5 children. I done that. You know what I'm saying? I actually have more, but everybody didn't make it. So, but that's another discussion. What I'm saying is that you know how a shaggy person looks, somebody that's hard on their luck. I done seen some of our brothers out there that be begging for money. You know what I'm saying? And they keep a line up. But I also done seen brothers out there that don't have nothing, you know, holes in their shoes and in their socks. You know what I'm saying? I done took a few of them to go get something to eat and talk to them, and I found out that they veterans. But yet, every day, I don't have cable or nothing, but I do pay attention to the news and what have you. And I love to hear these white people holler about how they love veterans and what have you. But yet, out in San Francisco, you know, you have the largest homeless veteran population in this nation, and they're arresting them. You know, it's been several shows, not our shows over here, because I say ours, and I hope that didn't get on nobody's nerves, but the network that Scotty started, I ain't never heard that over here. But when I listen to these terrestrial radios or these online news networks, they have so much love for our veterans. And I call into them. And I ask them about that. And nobody ever has an answer. Right now, in my city, Chattanooga, Tennessee, they redoing downtown. They want to redo the entire downtown. It's like 6 blocks. Yeah, because we stay in a small town, you know what I mean? We stay in a small city, rather, compared to New York or Boston or maybe even Charlotte. I'm not sure, Brother Scott. But, you know, they want to tear down the whole thing and rebuild it. But before they can do that, they have to get rid of the building where all of the homeless people stay, because they always come down to downtown where the pigeons and stuff at, and they may not have nothing, but they'll throw bread to the pigeons. And then they arrest them for loitering. But they love the veterans, though. These are all things I just take into account, and I never can wait to bring this out. I done said this to my governor, Bill Haslam. Now, he's done some, and this is another side note. This don't have nothing to do with the show, but I want to throw this out here. And my apologies, hopefully I ain't derail anything. But here in Chattanooga, man, Bill Haslam has finally passed through the law that everybody, now pay attention to my words now, everybody that's an adult in Tennessee, they can come here and they can go to school for 2 years, no tuition. Now, that sounds great, but this goes back to the thing that I said first, and I said it first when we got on the air tonight because I wanted to keep reiterating this particular mind frame. Just because something seems good and you're emotional about it does not mean that that's the way you should go. Now, with the listenership that Brother Scotty has, Brother Dave has, Melanated Roots, the few that people that listen to us, then I can't remember the people I listen to on Wednesdays at 2, Brother Scotty. You can throw that in later on. And it's a countless other number of radio shows that I be checking out on Black Talk Radio. I always want us to know that we cannot operate off of emotions. Now, the question that I have is, how many of you know what the ratio is for getting a job from a high school dropout white person versus a 4-year degree, a bachelor that looked like us? Melanated person, quote unquote black, if that's what you identify as, aboriginal, descendant of an African, what have you. What happens is that the white high school dropout is more likely to get a job than us when we done been through college to get a bachelor's. Now, on the surface, everybody gets free tuition for an associate's. Okay, so that means that if they can do their good work, they can make up their high school diploma, get in school, and get an associate's if they put in their work. For us, a lot of us graduated school without even trying, and then didn't go to college. Some of us did. But we could do all of this for free, at least for the associates. So we now neck and neck. But if a 4-year graduate cannot get a job over a high school dropout, what does it mean when you have a whole bunch of us that have the same qualifications? And I didn't mean to run that far off on a tangent, but this is something that's pretty good, because I want to say that we are the first in the country to give out free schooling for adults, and that is great. I am not knocking it whatsoever, but I would like to give, like I said, I'd like for everybody to look at it at all angles, because when you glorify somebody for something that seems like it's great, nothing is ever done for us. Nothing ever has been. And if we're going to go off of history, nothing ever will be. So if we don't recognize these things and take a hold to them as they come and manipulate the circumstances to our vantage point, we will continue to be in the same place. With that being said...
Can I say something real quick? Sounds to me like the state of Tennessee found a way to make everybody a slave based off the NCAA report. If they're getting free college, then they're a slave. And when I first met Roz, and he can attest to this, we met in Lower Manhattan. Yeah. We spoke for hours, and this white man came up to us and asked us for change, and we were like, no. And I said, why don't you ask one of these white people for change? And he says, oh, you know you can't get none for white people. I got to go to Brownsville to be able to get some money. Now, Brownsville is the blackest part of New York. You know what I'm saying? It's the ghetto of the ghettos. You know what I'm saying? Where me and you could get shot, even though he's white. Nothing ain't gonna happen to him. But yeah. I'm just saying, they know who to ask for change, and they don't act. I watch them on the train. They'll come through. They won't even go to one of their own people. They only go to minorities, well, other than white people, to ask for change. I mute my mom.
He was telling the truth. I'll never forget that day.
Hey, those are facts.
Yeah,
I done heard that story too.
Yeah, I remember he cursed the white people out. He actually asked the white people right before he came to us. He said, you see that? they cheap SOBs. He was like, I'm going to go to Brownsville. I'm like, oh, no, here we go. And I was like, he probably will make his money for the night off of going to Brownsville. Because that's just how we are. We'll try to help, especially if you're white. I've seen black people turn their nose up at other homeless black people but give money to a white person before. So, I mean, like, they know, like Thomas said, they really know who. And that's that predator instinct. Because if you read Jeffrey Dahmer, the book about Jeffrey Dahmer, he said the same thing. He always knew who he could get to come home with him so he could drug them, rape them, sexually assault them, and eventually eat them. So there's a predatory instinct in these folks that that on many different levels they have spoken about. Go ahead.
Yo, I feel exactly what Brother Thomas was saying. We're going to have to dive a little bit deeper into this either on another show or on a private phone call. Right now, we got the break.
The last break.
We're going to get that, and then we're going to get into this reinstitution of the culture.
Yes, sir.
Just to let you guys know, I think you have Brother Davis or Sister Davis who just unmuted themselves, and just to let y'all know, coming back from the break.
Yeah, thank you, brother. We'll get to them soon as.
The Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Welcome back to Tando Radio Show. You're here with myself, Ross, and Brother Jenna. I do know that we have on the board our brother and or Sister Davis on the line. We're going to get them to come in and give us their contribution to the conversation or ask a question if they wish. It'll be great to hear from them, and it's always good to hear the voice of a friend. Hello?
Absolutely. It's always good, my brothers. Y'all doing an excellent job tonight, man. I'm going to tell you, it's always good when I could turn on Black Talk Radio and grow. And that's the main thing that the lesson we really want people to hear. Anytime you turn on Black Talk Radio, what you're going to get is going to edify you. A lot of the times we fail to realize that the biggest problem that we have as a people is that we have emulated so well, we have disconnected with who we are. The sad part about that is that in times like these when we have to make identifications, the system programs us to approach this through our emotions. But in reality, that we should have control over, because that also can victimize us, and the system knows that. That's why they constantly have us on an emotional roller coaster. But when we begin to understand our personal truths, ourself, from where we stand, we become more conclusive in our evaluation, because now we evaluate in our best interest, in your best interest. I see a lot of, I'm a veteran myself, I see a lot of homeless veterans, a lot of places. So the system teaches you, oh, we take care of our veterans if you listen to them. But when you're in the real world, you see that that is another one of the great deceptions that they propagate. We have to be able to separate that so that we can take a greater control over our lives and not be victimized by their values. I want to point out again Dr. Fox's book, Addicted to White, the Unholy Alliance. It's a powerful book because it teaches about our psychological mindset dealing with taking on a white persona to fit into the system, coming back into a black culture and not realizing we're carrying a lot of that white persona into the program that we set down to, meaning that if you come home and watch TV or listen to the radio, you're continuing a program that literally you should be separating yourself from so that you can get back to whom we are. And the sad part about it is the largest part of our people don't understand that. So I look forward to shows like this who can bring clarity to ordinary situations and allow me to focus on how I would deal with that from this perspective of my truth in the situations that I hear you guys talk about. So it's a continual lesson all the time. I just wanted to call and add that, brothers. You're doing an excellent job, and I appreciate the show that you have. Yeah, man.
Hey, Brother David, as Roz just said, we appreciate that so much, man. One of the things is that I'm hopefully, if nothing else, just put yourself on mute or and because your mic is open. So because I want to know from these particular dynamics that we're getting ready to go into this revitalizing of the culture, because there was a disconnect at one point. So we have hit reset essentially with this culture. We talk about culture, and most times a lot of young children and even not, yeah, I'm trying to throw an age out there and I'm catching a blank, but let's say, like I stated earlier, I'm 36. Most people about 54 or what have you, not all, but most are unfamiliar with the cultures that was passed down to them. So before we even get started on this, I would like to hear what you would add in to a new culture that's being cultivated, and what Brother Scotty would add in to a new culture that's being cultivated.
That's a powerful question, because I'm going to tell you, I've been working on that myself. And the reason being is because we have to become the new example. If we expect our children to be a part of this transformation process that we put in place, we have to be their example. So literally, I present my culture every time you see me. I have something that reflects that I'm different from Westernism, whether it's my dress, my beads, my perspective, and why we shouldn't just emulate the English language. And what do I mean by that? I mean, when we talk, we have to give our children clarity, because slang that they're picking up now has no clarity. It has interpretive, individual interpretation. And
yes,
if you don't know how to
do it,
that's right. So therefore, we have to be able to open the door and sit down with our children and give them an understanding that we use this language because we were taught it. But if I could, and in many cases, I'm looking for things like Rosetta Stone and that sort of thing to open doors for us to have a certain degree of knowledge given to us in reference to our cultural language, which we have to understand. We come from a culture of many thousands of different dialects.
Exactly.
And we have to go ahead.
I'm sorry, Brother Davis, but when you said that, I have to interject this. That's why I stated that what would you add to the new culture that we, you know, the redefinition, the refining of the culture? Because the culture that you lived in versus the culture that I came up in are two totally different cultures.
Also,
absolutely.
For the people that's coming up, what would be your, what would you insert to that next generation to cultivate a new culture for the ones who are just picking it up? And that's the question that I'm asking.
That's a difficult question.
I want to get Brother Scotty also and see what he would like to add in before we go to Brother
Rod. Okay, Brother Scotty,
would
you like to go ahead and ask Brother Scotty?
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that question because it depends on a person's definition of culture, which there are several different definitions of culture. Let me just share a couple of them. Culture, the arts, and other manifestations of human intellectual achievement regarded collectively. For example, Phil, and I'm mentioning Phyllis Wheatley because we just highlighted her as an abolitionist on New Abolitionist Radio, but she's most known for literature. So when we talk about culture, it just depends on what you're talking about. Now, another definition that I think you're talking about is, for example, here's one from Merriam-Webster, the integrated pattern of human knowledge, belief, and behavior that depends upon the capacity for learning and transmitting knowledge to succeeding generations. So I think that more applies to what you're speaking about, since you brought up,
yes, sir,
you know, the other generations. So your question again was, what would I add to it, or what would I give them?
Yes, sir. For the new culture, that's because, like you said, the second, and if you will, before we get off the show tonight, if you will read that back out again,
okay,
that will be so much appreciated, because, like you just stated, not many of us even know what the definition is. Because if you ask anybody, let's say your daughter's age,
mm-hmm,
or younger,
mm-hmm,
they will refer you to hip hop.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So we have to. What I'm saying, and I'm saying this because this is what I'm trying to do personally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to establish this and pass it on as something that they need to pass on also.
Okay, let me read that again for you. That is the integrated pattern of human knowledge, belief, and behavior that depends upon the capacity for learning and transmitting knowledge to succeeding generations. So to answer your question, for myself, reading this definition, and it's talking about the importance of a person even having a capacity for learning and then communicating, which is, you know, transmitting knowledge to future generations. I would say analytical thinking or critical thinking is most important. And that's what I try to pass on to my daughters. And as my grandchildren get older, you know, just to teach them, because, you know, as Dave talks about so much, the system schools us. It doesn't teach us to think about or to question what they teaching us or indoctrinating us with. So I think that's the most important thing for cultural development is the ability to critically analyze things, and it's also known as critical thinking. I don't know if that really answers the question, but that's the only thing I can come up with.
I kind of hate I asked you, because that was my answer too, but I got
I'm sorry.
it's cool though, you know, great minds think alike. You ready, brother Davis, or you want to go with? Because Brother Rise over there itching. I can feel him scratching right now.
Let's go to Brother Rise, the board, the barrier.
Thank you, Brother Davis, and great answer, Brother Scotty. I've always said my definition of a culture is the ability of a people to pass on life-saving information to their offspring. That information would consist of complete understanding of the world in which they live and are growing up in, and life-saving information on how to navigate the world that they live in. And by that definition, I would say that Black people do not have a culture, because the culture that we practice here is white supremacy, and even the cultures that seem to be ours are infested with white supremacy as well. And, you know, we've been trained to glorify the things that come from us regardless of what they are. And the vast majority of things that we indulge in collectively as a people are detrimental to our survival. And these and those detriments are things that we tend to pass on to our offspring, not an understanding of those detriments so they can avoid the pitfalls. As far as establishing a new culture, that would be the main thing. Let them understand from as early as possible what they are dealing with. Help your children understand that, you know, we are collectively intergenerational prisoners of war who have been subjugated by an invasive force of people who practice white supremacy in order to maintain their domination and control of us. And we collectively have to come to an understanding of that problem and create different systems that are the antithesis to the systems that they have created to dominate us. And, you know, everyone will have something to contribute to the 10 areas of people activity: economics, education, entertainment, healthcare, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. And we should be able to collectively come up with a codified, holistic codified response to the system. And one of the linchpins in that codification would be what I think is the number one driving engine of the system of white supremacy, which is anti-blackness. When you look at the way the system functions, you have 7% of the world's population dominating 93% of the world's population and in control of 98% of the world's resources. So when you look at that just by sheer mathematics, you're talking about people being under mind control. And we have to understand what mind control is, what it looks like, how we exhibit those traits in and of ourselves. We have to be self-analytical and be, like Scotty said, critical thinkers, and be able to call those things out in ourselves and set up systems to tease out the healing process, because we can't depend on our enemies to do so. They never have and they never will. So I would say that that's what I would contribute. There's so much we can talk about because the subject is a very wide and varied subject, but that would be my contribution in regards to trying to facilitate the resurrection of a new culture. And I would just say to take the best of what the modern era has to provide, and we go into our past and we take the best from the systems that were created by us and for us, and we create a holistic system with the symbiosis and the connection between the two, the past and the present, so that we can go into the future and just make sure that our children come up from as early as possible to be less confused. That's the biggest thing.
Ah, man, Brother Roz, that was beautiful. You got yours together yet, Brother Davis? Because I can go if you need a little bit extra time, or Sister Davis, or Brother Thomas. And Hold on, just a second before you get started. We are down to our last 10 minutes. And we would love to hear your viewpoint also. So for all of y'all that's out there listening, 10 minutes we have left to get this in. So if you want to join us and give us your thoughts and opinions on this, by all means, give us a call. The number is 704-802-5056. The number again is 704-802-5056. Thank you for listening. I don't know if that was Brother Davis or Brother Thomas. I heard two people, so my apologies for getting it in real quick. But
I had spoke up because literally I've been listening to everybody and I understand that. But let me throw a wrench in the works, because I know a lot of people haven't even thought about this. But what if we had been the victims of an invasion? Interesting, what, isn't it?
Yes, please.
What if we are in the identification stages of understanding we are the victims of invasion? It changes the dialect, the dynamic. And the reason being is because when you look at what's going on in the world, we have literally been under attack. Everything has been stolen, steal, kill, or destroy. And terraforming is in total effect. So we have to elevate ourselves to achieve a level of growth that will allow us to be able to achieve the impossible.
I just want to leave y'all with that, man, because in reality, that is starting to look more and more truer every day. Thank you, my brothers. Look, I got to run out the door. My wife is waving. We're going out to dinner. It's been a blessed evening, but we got to pick this up again.
Yes, sir.
No worries. Thank you. Have a safe and enjoy yourself. About that.
I didn't know what
did you have something to add in? I know it was two people.
Yes, let's get
it. Go ahead, Brother Thomas, because I'm going to try to jump in after that.
Yeah, I define culture as way of life. It's the way you live, and everything around you will reflect that. And I think that black people do have a culture. It's called white supremacy, like Law said. We do everything to ourselves and each other what white people do to us. Everything they do to us, we mimic it to a T. And we have to create a new culture. The first thing that comes with culture, what I noticed that every culture ever to exist, they had a nationality. And we have to have a national identity, a name that we call ourselves, that we all agree upon. And it has to be new. We have to be a modern culture. We can't be trying to go back to ancient times, trying to replicate something that already was done. We have to be moving forward. It's the technology age. We have to be a technical culture. I think if Wakanda didn't show you anything, it should have showed you that the only way you're moving forward is if you're technically advanced. And to me, those things right there would go to creating a whole new culture. Leaving white supremacy alone, stop participating in every aspect of the system we can, until we have enough stuff where we don't have to depend on that system for anything, and identify ourselves something different than everyone else in the world, and have a culture that's based upon forward thinking and moving forward. Because white people have quantum computers, they have all kinds of stuff. They're not living in the past. They talk the past, they show it to you on television, but they're in the future.
Forward.
Yes, sir. I'll move my line.
All right, thank you, brother Thomas. Man,
that was a brilliant
man.
Addition. He's accurate as all get up, man. He said it. Go ahead.
Yo, I checked this brother out on YouTube. I listened to Brother Scotty, and I started doing different things on YouTube and stuff. But I had been saying this long before this brother had got on. His name is Dane Calloway. All of y'all go check him out as well as Black Talk Radio Network and BTR community. Because Scotty, I think about everything that Scotty be saying too. But I've been saying this for a long time. For a long time. I just come here to make you think. That's why I ask the questions that I do. And that's why I give so many different points of views from one question. I look at things from so many different sides. My idea of culture is just what Scotty read in the definition. And everybody else on this panel tonight has had the same definition. They didn't incorporate everything, but the same definition. So, with passing something on, Brother Scotty, I told him he took my answer, and I'm going to call you about that, too. But he took my answer, but then Brother Davis come in, and he took my answer. And then Brother Thomas come in, and he took my answer, because I would incorporate all of those things. And it's a few more things that I would incorporate, but the first thing in front of all of that was at a young age to be able to grab whatever firearm, or if you have a machete or knife, to understand what those things mean. Because the reason I say that is because what we speak about here in this closed space, this safe space, that Brother Scotty has created for us that we are privy to, it's always somebody watching us. So the first thing to get to any of those things that they named would be to protect yourself. Not hurt yourself with the things that's around the house. Because children don't have to hurt themselves because things are laying around the house. They go snoop. So one of the first things that I would introduce into the new culture, and like I said, I base this off of what I do at home, we go learn about knives. We go learn about guns. We go learn about slingshots. And we also learn how to shoot a crossbow and a bow and arrow. We learn about the fruits and vegetables that grow where we live at. We learn what poison ivy is, poison oak. We learn about all of that stuff. Because it's going to come a time, and we've been listening to Tando long enough to where we know, and we've seen so many of these things that Brother Dave has talked about. We've seen these things happen. Some of us even call in and we ask him about it, me being one of those people, but not just me. So we see this stuff happening. What I would say is, along with what I just stated as far as what I would add into the culture, is to know your surroundings, because that's going to be there. Everything else can perish, but your surroundings is going to be there. And when I mean your surroundings, I mean if something was to happen to where you didn't get yourself hurt because of a nuclear explosion or what have you, it's going to be some woods somewhere. You have to know what you can consume and what you can't consume. When you're hurt, you're going to need to know what you could take and what you shouldn't take. So these are the things that I would like to pass on in this new culture that we're cultivating. And Brother Roz, with that being said, you share what you would like to share again and hit us with the closeout prayer, brother. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
Father, I think you did you brought something up that was quite essential, and it's one of the most important skills you can give your children, which is how to survive. You know, if things get to a critical point and there is no grocery store anymore, how do you survive? How do you live off the land? And I think that is just the most important thing, and to do your best to learn about the local plants in your area, the local flora and fauna, where they live, how to find them. They have books that have actually different techniques, simple, and a lot of them are indigenous techniques for hunting small game, large game, things like that. Learn those things because they might come in handy. You never know. And like Dave said, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. And I think one of the most important things somebody brought up earlier in the conversation, I think it was Brother Scotty, he talked about in the film The Black Panther that they would call white people colonizers. And I think that what we do, especially on the context of white supremacy, we speak about using words accurately. And I think that is one of the most accurate terms we can use to describe white people without being offensive, the colonizers, because it tells you what they are, the fact that they are not indigenous to the land, the fact that they are an invasive force that is dominating us. It'll keep that in the forefront of our psyche. And like Scotty said earlier, he thought that, you know, he asked the question, did we think that them using that term in the movie facilitated moves on the continent to get land that was stolen back from white colonizers to give it back to the people that it was stolen from? And I think that that is something that can be a psychological tool to shift the consciousness of our people. We have tons of terms that we use to describe them, but I think we could and should incorporate the term colonizer, because I think in everyone's mind, it'll put them in the proper status as far as the role they play in our daily lives and the fact that we're prisoners of war. We have been colonized.
Hey, real quick, because you hitting up some points. I just want to answer that question real quick. No, because they was already taking that land back, supposedly, before the movie came out. I just wanted to, but that goes back to the emotions that we react to. And we have to get up out of that. We got to just deal with facts. But my apologies. Go ahead, brother.
No, I was just saying, I just think that is a term that we can incorporate in our conversation about slavery and human trafficking. I think it's a concept we can incorporate in our discussions about racism, white supremacy. And I just thought it was important, regardless of whether it was a factor, I think it can be a factor. I think as far as just the idea of propaganda, I think that was a bit of propaganda that might have been a Freudian slip that was inserted in the movie. Because when you're presenting to victims a situation where you're calling yourself out for what you really are, even though the film went in different ways and caused a little bit of confusion based on different things that happened, I didn't see it yet, I'm hoping to see it this weekend, ultimately that is an accurate term to describe the people that we're dealing with.
And hey Ross.
Yes, sir.
Ross, if I may interject, I need to point out that the two main writers for the Black Panther are African descendant people. So I don't think it was a Freudian slip. I think they intentionally put that in there. And
yeah.
I agree with you. Because, you know, one of the things, you know, that I do appreciate about Mr. Neely Fuller and him, you know, telling us we need to be more codified, you know, in our speech, in our thoughts, in our behavior. And
absolutely.
I remember hearing him say, when you went, like, say, let's say I went to a school board meeting or something like that, and, you know, it's predominantly white people, which is like where I live is predominantly white people, and I'm calling out racism or something like that. And Mr. Fuller was saying that it's more constructive to use other words other than calling somebody a racist. Absolutely. Because that's automatically going to make them get defensive or screen reverse racism or something like that. And he was saying there's ways you can describe the behavior of racism without using the R word. So
absolutely,
I think that all white people can be described, especially if they are not on the European continent where they came from or their ancestors came from, that I think that is an accurate term, whether they racist or not. They're absolutely colonizers. So I think that's a great codified word to use.
Thank you. It just came to me. I sat there and I was like, this is a actually powerfully accurate descriptive term. And if you know the etymology of the term colonizer, it comes from the name of Christopher Columbus. His real name was Cristobal Colon. So every time you say colonial, colonizing, you're paying homage to the original colonizer, the original pedophile rapist, the person who discovered black melanated, heavily melanated people on this continent and spoke about them from the first time he landed here. So I think that it's a powerful term that will always psychologically put who and what they are, both historically and contemporarily, in proper perspective for anyone who's trying to speak accurately about this system and accurately working towards this destruction. So this was a powerful show. I thank you so much, Brother Scotty. I thank you, Brother Dave, for the opportunity. Thank you, Brother Thomas, for calling in. Brother and Sister Dave.
Brother Ross, I'm sorry to interrupt. I think you got one more call. Did y'all pick up the call from Otis?
Sure. Oh, no. Go ahead. Your mic is open. Go ahead.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Great show you guys had tonight. I heard some ages put out there, and I'm going to tell you, I'm 64. And one of the biggest things about media in America, Billy Graham just got laid in the capital of the U.S., only the fourth citizen to be given that honor, along with one of the only females is a black woman, Rosa Parks. Mm-hmm. Billy Graham got his start from Hearst Media because they needed somebody to help break the unions, and they used religion to do that. You can Google all of this. I'm going to say to you, I haven't seen a Black Panther, but I sit underground and service to this country for 6 years and watch how deception and propaganda is used. There's not a single con in the history of humans that does not include facts. When you want to deceive someone, the best thing is to give them the illusion that you're offering them something for them. That movie left young black people with the idea that NGOs, the UN, and the CIA are something positive. If you can get past that and understand that you're being set up to have a generation of young people accept that having Afrikaner on the continent of Africa in 53 out of 54 countries as a good thing. It's not good. I'll leave it there.
Hey, Brother Scotty, me and you had a conversation before the show even started, and then I kind of brought Brother Roz into it later on. Did I not say the same thing?
Yes. Yes.
I'm.
But what he just described, I describe as Barack Obama. That's what his whole administration was about. That's what that whole symbol, his symbolism, what he symbolizes, is
symbolism.
About.
Symbolism. You called it out right there. That's the word, because that's what all of it was. It was symbolism.
It's deception. It's deception based on the illusion of being positive, when in fact you're setting them up for the ruse.
I think I mentioned that too earlier.
Dr. Marimba Ani calls it rhetorical ethics.
The illusion of freedom. We have so much of this going on. Brother, I didn't catch your name.
It's Otis.
But we would like...
Oh, it's Brother Otis.
Brother Otis. Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. We have to have you from time. See, we gotta find a new time, Brother Roz. We gotta find a new day and another time, because I be wanting to chime in to Brother Scotty's program, and I know Brother Otis be on there. Excuse my children above me. I just heard them falling on the floor. My apologies. But we got to have him involved in the show also, because you can never get nothing much more authentic than people older than us telling us what they've seen as they passed along through this time that we're living in. So with that being said, we have gone over. My apologies, Scotty. Hit us with the prayer and take us on up out of here. We love all of y'all.
Absolutely. Thanks for spending your evening with us. Thank you, Brother Scotty. Thank you, Brother Dave, for the opportunity to reach the people this evening. Thanks to Thomas, Brother Otis, Brother Davis, and all the other callers and listeners for spending your Friday with us. We're going to get ready to get up out of here. Say the prayer and make it happen. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest, and I mean the highest, levels of black self-respect at all times and all places, especially each and every time that we are in contact with another black person. Again, it's time to replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Again, thanks for spending your Friday, March the 2nd, with us this evening. Peace and love. Have a safe weekend. Thanks again, Brother Scotty. I don't know if Brother Bragg is there and he wants to chime us out, but you can take us up out of here. One love to everyone.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.